Welcome to the Old Capital Real Estate Investing Podcast with Michael Becker and Paul Peebles. During this program, you will hear interviews with real-life successful investors who will share their stories and provide useful advice on how to acquire, finance, and operate apartment complexes. Now, here they are, Michael Becker and Paul Peebles.
Welcome to the Old Capital Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Peebles, National Underwriter for Old Capital. And joining me today, as always, Michael Becker.
Hey, Paul.
So in the podcast today, we have a friend of ours, a gentleman that we've known for a number of years, who kind of started out as a baby. Now he's a grown man. He's taken a portfolio from almost zero up to 2,100 doors, so a very respectable size portfolio of multifamily properties. And so in the podcast, we're going to learn a little bit about how he started, how he finds and found properties in the past, and how he manages and owns these properties. So in the podcast today, we have Kenny Wolf. Kenny, how are you?
Good. How's it going, Paul?
Mike? Good. Thanks for hanging with us a little bit in the podcast. So tell us a little bit, Kenny, about your background. Let's go way back. What did you do? Where'd you come from?
I was born in Denver, Colorado. I was an oil brat, so we moved around every 2.5 years, basically. And that took us overseas twice, but mostly back to Houston. So I grew up mostly in Houston on the west side. And then I went to Baylor University and then moved up to Dallas after graduation, got an entry-level accounting job at an oil and gas firm here in town. There were probably five of us in that office at the time. He ended up selling his East Texas assets, that principal, and then getting into the Barnett Shale. So that company grew very quickly. And then from there, I got promoted fast. I ended up being a junior partner and CFO on a Shreveport oil and gas venture there doing the Haynesville Shale.
Wow, so you are the expert to know about oil and gas business.
I know a little bit about it.
And now you're the expert of multifamily. So talk to us a little bit about what's been going on with you since last time we met in 2014 at the podcast. So you and I are friends, so I know what's going on. But explain to everybody about what you've done since 2014.
Yeah, I was actually looking at my notes and was looking back at where we were in 2014. 2014 was when we bought our first out-of-state multifamily property, which was exciting. It was in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It was a big step for us. It proved that there was more to multifamily than just Texas. It was a conduit to also buying properties in Oklahoma and Ohio as well.
Yeah, because so. You had already owned a couple hundred doors in Texas, and so Colorado was your next push
right.
of ownership in a different state.
Right, yeah. And what really kind of drove that was I was getting a little frustrated with the prices here in Dallas, Fort Worth, maybe 2-3 years ago. So actually, I started looking outside. I drove to Oklahoma City. And then on the way back, I had from Oklahoma City, I had one of those aha moments that if I was willing to drive 2.5-3 hours to Oklahoma City, why not hop on a plane for 2.5 or 3 hours? And so that really.
And it didn't hurt because you're a huge Broncos fan.
So. That was also an easy excuse to get up there, too. So.
What I remember about that deal in Colorado was in that property had a few green plants in some of the units, and that was a line item income stream.
No, not quite. But yeah, we discovered 2 grow rooms while we were doing our due diligence there. So.
And what was the rule on that? And I forget from the period of time you told me, what was the rule on how many grow rooms you could have in an apartment building?
Well, there wasn't so much grow room per building, but it was each family could have up to 6 plants. They're in Colorado, so it's a little different up there.
So talk to me a little bit about your investment strategy. I mean, you owned in Dallas, you made a move up to Colorado, and then you kind of opened up the doors to other states. Kind of talk to me about what your big investment strategy overall view was.
I kind of joke, but my investment strategy is to have real estate, will travel, but there's really a lot more to it. So the first thing I look forward to see if the state's landlord friendly. It's not, if it takes 6 to 9 months to evict someone, I'm not going to buy there. It's just not worth the headache. And then next few tests are if it has diverse economic drivers, low historic unemployment, and a historical population growth. Mm-hmm. So those are things that we're looking for. So the 4 states we're in, they're all landlord friendly. So just for an example, let's pick on Columbus, Ohio. We have 2 properties there. And we're picking on it because probably not a lot of folks know of it or have know about it. So, but it's a good example. So it's the state capital. It's home of what I'm told is the Ohio State University.
I've heard about that school.
Then also too, you've got a lot of retailers headquartered there. So you got Abercrombie & Fitch, Hollister, Victoria's Secret is there too. You've got nationwide insurance. It's just a very diverse economy, a really big medical facility too. But it's got historic population growth of 2% a year, just like clockwork, and low historic unemployment.
Now, in your properties, do you have a large student population on it?
We do not. We're not in the student markets there.
Okay. How many units do you guys have in Columbus, Ohio?
All right, now we've got 336 units there.
So a good-sized portfolio in Columbus. Now, you live in DFW. How difficult is it to manage a property in Columbus, Ohio, or in some of these other states? How do you do it?
It's really not that difficult, in my opinion. You know, I probably visit our Ohio properties more than I do our property here in Wylie, Texas.
Really?
Because the one at Wylie has already been stabilized. It's been fixed up. It's been rehabbed. It stays at between 96 and 100% occupied. If I show up, the manager's not leasing units. She's not evicting people. I try to keep my visits pretty short. So on the ones out of state, I don't see them as much different as ones here in town. But the ones that are the new acquisitions, I do visit more frequently. We set the rehab, get those numbers all figured out, what the interiors are going to look like, the paint colors on the outside, things like that. And once those are set, then we visit at least once or twice a month until we're stabilized.
So you go out and syndicate these deals. So what does like a typical investor look for these days? What are kind of like their key triggers when you're pitching a deal? What sells these deals to the investors?
Investors are looking for yield. I mean, we're in a yield-starved market all over. So that's mostly what they're looking for, what I've seen. So I haven't gotten a lot of pushback from going to other markets outside of Texas. As VivaMax have actually told me that they prefer it because it makes them diversified across different markets.
So yield, what are some of the challenges or what are some of the reasons people don't invest? Like, so if I'm an aspiring syndicator, what are some of the things that get people to invest with Kenny? You know, what's kind of the secret sauce a little bit on why people invest with you versus pass on a potential opportunity?
Right. I mean, I think as an investor, you've got to really look at the track record of that deal sponsor, because I mean, it's these properties and these investments all have curveballs. We project them as a straight line going up. It's more up and down. It's on that upward path, but you've got curveballs and, you know, in these deals. So it's a matter of being in business with someone, investing with someone who's going to be able to handle those curveballs.
Talk to me about some curveballs that have been thrown at you.
Curveballs. So we've got, I guess, the biggest one. There are two properties we actually turned around and saved. So I'll kind of go about those, I guess. Those deals, I was actually one of them. The first one was a passive in. The deal sponsor, we couldn't find him for 6 months. He just put his head in the sand. He got way over his skis, didn't reach out. And that, the lender started sending letters saying they were going to take back the property. So the investors voted me in to turn around. And so that property was, we showed up. I mean, it's just kind of funny. I mean, it was kind of a comedy of errors. But the on-site manager and the former deal sponsor was trying to give away a cruise to folks at the C-class property in Irving, Texas. I mean, they can't afford to get down to Houston, let alone to take 2 weeks off to go on a cruise. So
tell me that again. So rent an apartment unit and get a free cruise out of Houston or Galveston, which is, you know, 5-6 hours away.
Right.
You know, that's supposed to induce people to rent for a year?
Well, I mean, maybe at a B or A class, maybe. I mean, I could see some of that, but at a C class property,
working class people,
there's just no way.
And he
didn't have a bilingual speaker in the office. There's a lot of stuff that he was kind of missing out on. So, but really, what got him in trouble was an insurance claim, and that he was really trying to put the screws on the insurance company and fight it and all this stuff. So that was the kind of biggest deal I had to settle with that property.
Yeah, you came in with the white hat and the white horse and kind of took that thing out of the ditch and kind of saved. That doesn't happen too often. And have you seen it happen in other transactions?
No, I haven't. I haven't been called on again, which is good. That was a lot of stress turning those two around. But I don't see it very often. You just got to have someone at the helm that cares and will give 110% effort when it's needed. Well, it's not always needed, not every day, but sometimes it is.
So you're pretty active in the marketplace. You bought two deals this year, is that right?
Two deals so far.
So what's some of the challenges you see in the marketplace right now? So what are some of the challenges, and how does today, and we sit kind of towards the end of April as we record this, 2017. So how does that compare to, say, 2013, 2014, when we first started doing some deals? And what's the environment, kind of compare and contrast those two?
I wish I would have bought more in 2013.
And we all.
Yeah. So, I mean, today, you know, we're really focused on off-market deals that have deferred maintenance, that have management issues. Those are the things we're doing, because by doing that, by buying those, we're hedging our bet. We're hedging our investment on these deals. The transaction we just bought in Waco for 34 a door, You know, it was it's a block and a half from campus, from Baylor University. So if it was already fixed up, we would have paid $55-$60 a door for that property. So those are the deals we're attracted to.
Let's talk about that deal, because that's a deal that you just closed, and there was some, as they say, hair on the dog on that deal.
Yeah.
So give us a little bit of an idea. Let's walk through this transaction. How did you find it? And, you know, where is it located at and all the good things? Do you own other properties in that Waco area?
Yeah. So we bought this small portfolio of 66 units, a block and a half from campus, Baylor University. Bought it for $34 a door. The asset is currently 50% occupied. So there was a lot of hair on this one. Hence the reason why we got it for such a low price per door. A JV partner of mine, Shashir Kaushik, was the one that actually found it. It was on market late last year. I think the one at 4.2, we ended up buying it for 2.2 once it was off market. The sellers realized that they had an asset that was 50% occupied and they weren't going to get max price for it.
And why was it 50% occupied?
Mostly by choice. They were really planning on doing a big rehab of the property. So they were actively discouraging students from leasing units last year during leasing season for students. So that's why it was 50% occupied.
Were they trying to do the rehab themselves and the guy just got behind?
Yeah, they switched management companies. They were trying to do it themselves. They just had a lot going on. And also, too, those guys are mostly commercial and land guys. This is their only multifamily asset.
Were they thinking about it, maybe a covered land play to maybe?
They were. There's a brand new A-class being built across the street. So I think they were probably hoping that they would get bought out just to tear it down and for land.
And work backwards. I mean, the Class A building, what do you think that cost to build?
Oh my gosh. I've been told the high rises here in Dallas could run 168 a unit. I don't know if that's true on those. It's multi-story. So maybe, yeah, so that's why they were doing it, is the new A-class right across the street. I know their rent, they're asking $1,200 a month for a one bedroom. I don't know what their building cost is, but it's got to be north of $100,000.
And where will you be?
Our all-in is going to, our base is going to be $40,000 a unit or less. And then our initial underwriting was we're going to shoot for $725 a month.
Okay. So the property is, 50% occupied or so? And how did you get that deal financed with the property being so distressed?
Right. And that was the biggest question going in, is how do we get this financed? So we reached out to Paul Peebles and his crew, Old Capital.
James Eng, not Paul Peebles.
Sorry. James Eng. Reached out to James. And you know, we were just looking at the deal and we always kind of ask this question, not if we can get the deal done, but how can we get it done? And so we had to be a little creative on the debt side of it because it was 50% occupied. So we ended up getting a hard money loan on it through, you guys found a good lender here in town that did the deal.
So let's talk a little bit about that, Mike, and I'm trying to get your banker's hat on these deals. Most of these transactions are either bank financed because we have historical numbers that we can use, operating statements that make sense. And if they're stabilized properties, we'll probably do Fannie Mae loans or Freddie Mac loans on these deals. But why would somebody, Mike, use a hard money loan?
Just because there's no other options that are viable, I'm sure, and it's better than paying cash. I'm sure you kind of did the analysis of just raising 100% cash and right, getting a hard money loan. I'm assuming, I wasn't involved in the transaction, but I'm assuming that was kind of your decision point, I would imagine, right, Kenny?
Right, yeah. So we did look at that. We thought about, for about 2 days, I just was set on we're just going to raise the whole thing cash. But then we found this hard money lender, and they came, and it was a low leverage deal.
How low leverage was it?
The loan was 60%.
65%. Okay. It was 2 years of interest only?
2 years interest only. It was 10.5% interest, and there's a point exit.
So on something like that, you know, it's not the best type of terms that are available these days, but it's a band-aid to have you acquire the property, execute your plan during that period of time, you know, figure out how to rehab the property, stabilize the property, and at the end make a decision whether you're going to keep the asset or sell the asset. And if you keep the asset, you just refinance it into a Fannie Mae execution.
Exactly. We were already talking to kind of that next step, going to Fannie Mae, and if they would do the deal, do they like the deal? So we've already kind of touch base with them know.
And you're only, two blocks away from campus?
Less. We're like a block away.
Amazing.
Well, we don't necessarily work together personally as much as obviously you work with James and Paul more than me, but it's kind of observing you from afar. You're in five states, but probably six markets?
Four states and Yeah, and six markets.
Six markets. So how do you manage? I know you kind of alluded to you get on a two-hour car ride, the same as a two-hour plane ride almost, but like, how does that work? So you have a wife and a kid, and how do you manage all that from Dallas and stay on top of everything? And like, what are some of the tips or will you manage multiple markets to stay on top of everything?
We've really added to the team. So now we have an office space. I've got an assistant that helps me run the back office. And then we also recently brought in an asset manager too. So I can send him on some of these site visits where he can take pictures and talk to the folks and write up a report that we create and for him to produce. So it's a way to carbon copy me a little bit.
So it's a scale. So you're just, right. just kind of as you grow, you're scaling up with staff and redundancies and layers. And do you have any sort of software systems that help you out as well that you've kind of implemented over the last 3 years that you didn't have when you first started out?
Not so much software, I don't guess. I mean, I've improved the underwriting tool that I've used, but for the on the management side, not really. We've created some reports for the asset manager to knock out when he's there. But no major software.
So I always like to, when I'm talking to people that are aspiring to get in the business, I always like to kind of use the analogy that, from zero to one is really hard, and then one to two is exponentially easier, is 10 times easier.
Right.
Do you have any advice when you're kind of looking back to yourself and when you're first starting out, what are some of the key things that you did that got you kind of over the hump to do your first deal? And then from there, kind of how did you scale it, and maybe some of the differences between that first deal and then kind of moving forward?
We joined one of these real estate groups in town, got one of their mentors. They walked us through this first deal. I suggest that. It's this first deal, you're buying a property with a lot more zeros on the end than you would on single family. So you've got a lot more at stake. You've got investors' money at stake. It's a little bit more high pressure deal, if you ask me. So you need someone who can walk you through that first deal, in my opinion. It really helped. Our first acquisition in Wiley, I honestly thought it was a stretch because I kind of wrote down, I kept a running list as to how much I thought I could raise. The raise was more than that. But I got a good push from the mentor, and which was helpful. And so we bought that deal, raised the money, and had to turn away folks. It ended up being like that. So that was the first way to get that first deal done. Then, yeah, you're right. This after the second one, it really snowballs. And then when you're starting to really click and everything, and you've got your systems down and your underwritings can do in 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, you can really open up the gate and see what markets you want to go to next.
And how does that work with like the brokerage community and their perception of you, from no deals to one deal? How did that go? And then how did you replicate that in multiple markets?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the hardest thing. Is your first one obviously is the hardest, but it's also a little challenging. You're the first time you show up at a market and make offers. It's, like our deal up in Canyon, Texas. The reason why we bought that deal was because if you don't own in Amarillo, that submarket, it's tough to buy in Amarillo. I mean, those guys are all ranchers who happen to own multifamily. Same thing in Ohio. I was this guy from Texas showing up.
Carpetbagger in reverse.
So you've got to, you've got to buy that first deal. And then once you get into that submarket, they believe you're a buyer. That's really what it is.
What were some of the things you got over that? So say you owned, 1,000 units in Texas and Colorado, but you go to Ohio for your first deal. What were some of the things that got you over the hump, you think, with that broker to gain that? It's a credibility business, and that's what the brokers are hired to do, is assess the credibility of a potential buyer before they award the deal to them. So what were some of the things that you're able to do to get over that?
They're in Columbus. I've got a buyer broker. So that really helps too. They're local. They're based out of Dayton. They've been there for, I think this is their second generation. They're in their second generation of ownership there. So I use their name a little bit to gain some credibility with folks, and then bought that first deal, and then it's really opening up to a whole bunch of others.
We always like to say it's a team sport. So Kenny just kind of reaffirmed that he had a team member, and he used the we do this and we do that versus me and I.
Right.
So I think that really, really helps quite a bit. So I guess to kind of wrap up here towards the end here, what are some of the advice that you would give besides kind of getting a mentor? Any other tips or advice on how do you, operate your business, scale, especially from the first timer's perspective? Anything else you can leave them with to kind of help them grow in this business?
I mean, so one of the things that really got me over the hump was changing my mindset to ask a different question. The question was if we could do these deals, and then now it's how can we do these deals? So it's not so much that, and that's a big mindset. It's a small word change, but it's a big mindset change. So you've got to do that. You've got to be able to do that. We put these deals under contract without having any investors' money raised at the time. And so you've got to be able to be okay with that, live with that, and just trust that, if you've got a good deal, the money will come.
Tell me a little bit about what multifamily has done to change your life. I mean, you were kind of a 9-to-5 guy, but you had an entrepreneurial streak in you, and Now you're owning multifamily. What has it done for you personally, and what has it done for your family?
Yeah, I mean, it's done a lot of good things. Well, I've got a wife and daughter. We travel a lot. She's homeschooled, so we're able to pick up and go whenever we want. We just got back from a trip to San Antonio. My wife and daughter had just covered the Alamo like the week before. So we were able to pop down to San Antonio, check that out. And this, you know, buying these larger deals and having being able to afford people run the day-to-day operations for you is a big deal. It frees up your time from being stuck in the day-to-day where you can choose whether you want to grow your portfolio that day or if you want to hang out with your family, travel.
Yeah, you're a visionary. You don't have any keys to your any of your properties, do you?
No, I try not to touch keys, actually. That's a rule of mine. I don't touch keys. So.
So in a typical week, what do you do? I mean, are you out there looking at properties all the time? Are you trying to assemble money to buy these deals? I mean, what's your week look like?
You hit it right on the nail on the head. I mean, most of my time is spent analyzing deals and creating new investments for our investors, investment options too. Because these deals run the day-to-day, I don't have phone calls over evictions or toilets or anything like that, so I can focus on growing our investments.
Is there an area that you're looking at right now? I mean, Waco is a, let's say, a secondary market in Texas, you know, between Dallas and Austin. Is there any other markets in Texas that you like?
We're going to make an offer today on a larger property out in Amarillo. Okay. Trying to grow our market share out there. So we're looking there. You know, I've never really looked in Austin. I don't know that market very well. I'd like to get into the San Antonio, Houston, we're looking at as well.
How about outside the state?
Outside the state, obviously, we're trying to grow our portfolio where we already own, but I've made some run out of from properties in Indianapolis as well. The management company we use up there can easily do that, handle that. It's a good market. It's very similar to Columbus.
We definitely like Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's a great spot. We got close on two deals, I think, last year. And then I'd like to get into Tampa or Orlando. I just haven't cracked that nut yet.
Mm-hmm. So again, like Mike was saying, looking back today from to you as, say, 4, 5, 6 years ago, anything you would have done differently? Any good advice to the folks that are coming in up the ranks?
I guess start fast and go big or don't go at all is kind of the things we learned on our first sponsor deal. We wanted to find a transaction where we could get third-party management. That way weren't bogged down in the day-to-day. We could grow our portfolio. And so that's where we started. I mean, it wasn't a matter of, and then we kind of worked backwards. Well, how do we get there? So I think that's important because I think a lot of folks kind of sell themselves short and they do these smaller deals and are bogged down the day-to-day. And I just was talking to a guy the other day who bought a 14-unit deal and he wasn't very happy that he bought it.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, and the last thing I want to do is have to interact with the tenants and collect rent and do all that. It's kind of like buying a second job. So definitely bigger is easier. I know that's a mindset shift for a lot of people. They think smaller would be easier, but bigger the better, the easier, the more staff you can afford, and the more revenue produces, a better quality staff you can afford to pay. So generally speaking, the bigger they are, the easier they are. And there's obviously got to kind of stair step your way up to that. You don't start with a 500 unit deal typically, but you start with a deal big enough to afford professional third party management. I think that's a pretty good entry point for sure.
Yeah. And then every once in a while, Kenny has an investor meeting. Was it a monthly, quarterly basis, Kenny? You bring in a speaker every once in a while?
Yeah, we do it monthly. I've been doing it for probably a year and a half now, but we draw 50 to 80 people a month that come out. I've got a guest speaker. They speak for about 20, 30 minutes. And then we network until they kick us out of the space.
Yeah, the biggest thing is getting educated in this business. So any additional questions?
No, I just, you know, obviously observing you sort of from afar, it's been impressive to see you kind of grow over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And you've been 6 markets, and that's great. So continue the good work.
Anything more to add, Kenny, at all? What do you think people should know?
So I guess our contact information, our website is wolf-re.com. And Wolf is with an E. And then we've got a quarterly newsletter that goes out.
Oh, great.
To folks, kind of keep in touch, shows what we've been working on and what's closed in the past quarter. So that's good. And then email us at info@wolf-re.com as well.
And again, that's Kenny Wolf with an E.
Right. Wolf with an E. That's right.
So thanks for spending some time with us, Kenny. We appreciate that. Mike, anything more to add?
Yeah, if you guys, obviously, if you enjoy, listen to the podcast and enjoy it, we'd certainly appreciate a rating and review. I'm on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you have any questions for Ask Mike Mondays or you want to follow us and get on our weekly email blast with kind of upcoming events and deals that we've closed, you go to oldcapitalpodcast.com. There's a form there. It's oldcapitalpodcast.com.
Sounds great. Mike, thanks for your time today. Kenny, thanks for coming back and thanks for giving us an update about what's going on. Let's not make sure that it's not 3 years. Let's make sure it's right. maybe 6 months, another year. Let's get you back in here, talk a little bit more about the success for Kenny Wolf and his partners.
All right.
So thanks for coming in. We appreciate that.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Old Capital Real Estate Investing Podcast. Please join us at oldcapitalpodcast.com to sign up for our weekly email updates. We'll see you next week for another great interview.